So we're going to learn about a little bit more about UWP. I want to talk to you a bit about the new stuff that's coming in the anniversary update. And we're going to start with building engaging experiences. So we're going to start with what's new in XAML for the first half hour. And then the next half hour, we're going to talk about what's new in the API platform. So how many of you have actually written the UWP apps in the past? So that's about half. So to get everybody on the same page, let's do a little recap. So the Windows platform is the platform that runs on all Windows devices now. It actually covers everything from mobile phones to tablets, desktops, IoT devices, now the Xbox One, a Surface Hub, there's the HoloLens, there's all kinds of different devices. All these different devices have different form factors, they have different experiences, and they're used in different ways. But as part of this platform, we've also provided several different ways for you to develop applications, and we've made improvements in all these different things. First, we've made the platform and we made the platform be more adaptive, so all the controls and everything have support for all the input modalities and for all the different sizes, and makes it easy for you to build adaptive UIs for your applications. As part of the platform, we have big effort into making more natural interfaces or more natural user inputs and outputs, more human ways to interact with your applications, things like you saw in the morning, Cortana, inking, Windows Hello, stuff like that. And these are supported by different Universal Windows Platform devices. We have one SDK, meaning that you build one application and runs across all these different devices. You don't have to have different types of SDK and build it once for this, build it again for this, and have different things. It's just one application, one executable, runs everywhere. We've combined the dev store, so now we have one dev center. There's no longer separate stores. It's one store for desktop, one store for your phone, one store for your Xbox. And when, as a developer, when you submit your application, you go to one location to submit your applications. So you get the same features across everywhere. You get all the goodies in one place. And then finally, all the cloud services that we are working on and we've talked about today, they're all supported by the Universal Windows Platform. And we have SDKs and everything is already available for you. That's a quick recap of the platform. Now, I mentioned that you have one SDK, so you build one application, it's one executable. Does that mean that you should just write one application for the desktop and let it run everywhere else? Of course not. I mean, that's not what we want you to do. You shouldn't do that. Don't do that. So when you build these applications, you need to make sure that they work across all the different devices. These devices have different expectations from the users. For example, on the phone, it's something you hold really close to you. It's a small screen. You don't have a lot of real estate on this thing. And it's mostly used with touch. So you have control over making gestures, but you don't have much on the screen. So you have to adapt the UI for that. When you're on the desktop, you actually have a full screen, 1080p even more. Some people have 4K screens. And a lot of times, you actually use keyboard and mouse over touch. Some devices don't even have touch. So your applications need to support the keyboard and mouse very well. When you go onto the big screen of the TV, a lot of people are kind of laying down on the couch like they're dead, just watching TV. And then they don't use a keyboard and mouse. They don't go up to a screen to touch it. They have either a remote or they have a controller. So when you build your application for desktop, you should need to make sure it works with the controller. And that's something you have to think about as well. Also, the UI, even though you have this big real estate, because you're farther away from the UI, things need to be bigger. So you actually don't have much room on the screen to put as much things that you would if you were on the desktop. There's other devices that don't even have a screen, things like the Raspberry Pi that runs on IoT Core. A lot of cases doesn't have a screen. So if you want your application to run on this, you might have to consider running your application with different types of ways, with maybe user input, maybe connecting some GPIO pins. And things like the HoloLens device, which actually interacts with the site, the way you look at things and the way you talk to it. It doesn't even interact with any of the common inputs that you have. So all these different devices have different ways to interact with them, so you have to think about this. Now, how do you do this with one single UWP application? This seems like too much work. Well, we've done a lot of work on the platform to make this a lot easier for you. First, all the controls support all the different input modalities. Any control that you use right now will support pen, it will support touch, even supports the controller now, supports everything that's needed to work on every single platform. We have fluid layout panels for you, which you can use to easily rearrange items as things change or as things get loaded on different platforms. You can just take advantage of this. And we've we've created a way for you to think of UI and pixels in a very nice way that takes into consideration things like scaling, the screen, the size of the screen, et cetera, that just makes it easy for you to build your application, not think about these different things for your devices. We make things easier on the developer and the designer side of things by allowing you to use some of the same techniques that the web uses to make adaptive UI. So you can use some of the same techniques. We have ability for you to use things like triggers that you want to use to adapt your UI. You can even use separate XAML pages, but still use the same code behind. That way, if you want to have this XAML page for Xbox and a different XAML page for desktop, you can do that, and you can still reuse the same C# code. Or you might want to go with two different pages, one that loads it on Xbox this way, one that's loaded on desktop the other way. You have full control of how you want to do this and how you actually do it. And finally, as part of the tooling, we make this even easier. It built in into Visual Studio and Blend. For example, we have, as part of Designer, a way to simulate what device you're designing for. So you can go on the top and you can select, I want to see what my app looks like on the phone. I want to see what my app looks like on the Xbox. And you can do this really quickly without having to deploy to multiple devices at the same time. I showed you this morning how to deploy multiple devices, but it's sometimes quicker to just select a button and just do it on your machine. And you don't always have an Xbox when you're flying on the plane. Now, I want to show you some of my favorite things coming into the anniversary update this summer. So I'm going to do a quick demo for you. Now, for this demo, I'm actually using Visual Studio Dev 15. It's in preview mode right now. It's not going to ship this summer. But it has some really cool features that I want to talk to you about that are part of the platform as well, that makes it really easy to develop Universal Windows Platform applications. First thing I want to talk to you is a cool feature that I like. Let me go ahead and run this application. And this is a feature that has been requested for a very long time by developers. Let's do that. There you go. It's called the Edit and Continue for XAML. So what I can do, I can edit my XAML on the fly, and as the application is running, it's going to update and actually show my thing. So I don't have to change things in my XAML, recompile, run it, et cetera. So let's go ahead and uncomment this image. You can see it showed up right there. You can probably do some cool things. Let's change the size 200. Great. Look, I'm just changing things, and things just work. Let's make that. Is that going to work? It's go away. Three. Anyway, so as you're changing things in your XAML, you can quickly do these changes. It immediately just refreshes and it just works. For those that also noticed, this is actually an animated GIF. And you can see that I'm just using a GIF. For now, in the anniversary update, we support animated GIFs natively on the platform. So you no longer have to actually use a third-party library or anything like that that's rendered on the. You can just use this immediately into your application. You don't even have to think about it. Next feature is about accessibility. So how many of you like to use, when you're on the desktop, how many of you hate the mouse and kind of try to stay with the keyboard? Yeah, a few people. Well, now we're trying to make that easy for developers to make experiences that actually are fully accessible through the keyboard, making things accessible through access keys. And we've done that by enabling access keys directly into the platform. For example, we have a couple buttons here. You can see we have these properties called access keys. You can select which access keys can be used to access this button. And we have a couple methods here, a couple events, things like access key display request and access key display dismissed. You can get event when the alt button, for example, is pressed. So that way you can engage with that. It can show some UI if you want to let the user know what they need to press, et cetera. So if I can show you that code, what that looks like. Here you can see I'm using the setup tooltip method, but every time the user presses Alt, I essentially create these tooltips, and I set the placement right to the button, and I simply just open them up next to the button. That way, when the user presses the Alt button, I didn't change anything. Let's do that. Let's ignore that for now. That was weird. What? Let's go ahead and clean. Let's go ahead and debug together. Why don't everyone come around this computer? I need your help. Let's do this one more time. So that's what happens when you use code Visual Studio that hasn't been released yet. We're going to ignore that for now. Anyway, you would have seen as I pressed Alt that actually the letters will show up and you can press to activate the button. Just imagine that happening right here, right now. You guys imagined it? You like it? Good. Awesome. It's amazing, right? Next part I want to show you. Let me see if I can launch the application actually from here. Great. That's the one way to do it. Next thing I want to show you is something that actually is something that probably all of you have done it before, and that's the ability to, when you have sometimes messages, and as messages come in, you want to be able to, for the list view to scroll automatically and show the last message immediately. We have now have ability to do that really easily into the platform. So for example, what I'm trying to do is, as I'm typing things, you can see that the last message always stays at the bottom. And a lot of times you have to use timers, and maybe you have to use some kind of things every time something edit, always scroll down to the bottom, always make sure everything's scrolled. Has anybody ever gone through that and trying to do that? Yeah, several people here. So what we've done in the platform now, we've created this item stack panel property called items updating scroll mode. All you have to do now, you just have to change it to keep less item in view, and the scroll would just, the list view would just work. That's all it is. It's just one line of code to make this work. It's really cool. It's really easy. It just makes it easier for you to develop your applications. The next thing I want to show you is stuff around binding. Now, if you look at this application, I have this report here. I have several items bind to each one of these list items. It's not very complicated. It's very simple. But imagine having multiple different types of things binded. This is the view model here. You can see here that I actually have a dictionary with string. And if you know, if you've done binding before, if you try to bind to a dictionary, you know it's not always easy. You might need to do some converters. You might need to do some magic and then pray to the gods. It doesn't always work. Now, what we've done is you have now the ability to actually bind directly to a dictionary. You can just as if you were in C#, you can just go there and just bind to a dictionary item. And not just that, you can actually bind directly to functions, which is really, really cool. You no longer have to write converters. You have just you can just put in functions directly in here. We can do things like string dot lowercase and just pass in your data model to it, and it'll just kind of work in binding. This saves so much time. And if you've never done binding before, you should try this out. That's it. What do you guys think about that? No? I appreciate that. Now, this is just some of the things that I really like. So I showed you XAML edit and continue. Really easy way to develop your applications now. And if you want to try this out, just download the Visual Studio Dev 15 preview, and you'll be able to do this. Animated GIFs directly into XAML. You have a really easy way to do access keys. I showed you the items updating scroll mode for vertical list views, and then the XAML binding improvements that we've done into the platform. So really cool stuff. Now, there's a lot of new stuff that we have in the platform. I just chose a few of them. If I were to do all of them, I would stay here all day. But I encourage you, when you get home, you definitely try them out and play around with them. They will improve. They keep improving all over time. Now, we talked about Xbox, and there are really cool stuff that you can do on Xbox. We've spent a lot of time for this update to make sure that the whole platform supports Xbox really well. What does that mean? The first thing is we need to make sure that the gamepad and remote is supported by the platform. Things like being able to interact with different types of controls in a more intuitive way, be able to use the controller to navigate up and down, left and right, simply, being able to visualize what the focus looks like. So we kind of rearranged, we've done focus, so it looks much better now. Doing things like engaging with controls in a certain way. We've also spent a lot of time thinking about how do you present your UI on the TV, and how do we make that easier for you. TVs are tricky. The TV manufacturers do a lot of cool stuff, but also do some, a lot of crazy stuff into their platform that's kind of left over from past years. Things like TV safe area. A lot of TVs actually crop the outsides of your applications, of the view. So you have to think about that. So some of you could be cropped. So you have to think about always putting some margins on the side when it's on the TV. Also, things like colors are not always the same on the TV as you're writing your applications. For example, on the Xbox, a lot of times you'll find that the colors are cropped to 16 to 233, that's because that's how the TVs actually crop the colors, et cetera. And there's a lot of things you need to think about. Now, I want to show you a quick demo of some of these things. I want some of these things you have to think about when you're building your application for the Xbox. And for this demo, I'm not going to use the Xbox, actually. I'm going to use it all on the PC. Now, I'm going to use the PhotoBooth Pro application I showed you this morning. I'm not going to show you my camera, but I'm going to show you some of my beautiful photos here. But I'm going to use the controller, actually. So I have the controller plugged into the PC. And when I say we've done a lot of work on the platform to support controller and remote, all that stuff, that means the controller now works everywhere. You just plug it in, and it kind of just works. You can kind of start navigating. Can we see if we can get sound for this? I don't know if you can hear it. There's also sound. So we've done a lot of work on the platform. First, you notice that as I'm just scrolling with the controller, things just work. I haven't done anything extra to make the controller work on this. I can just go up and down, left and right. And the platform just sees, OK, what's next? What's right? What's left of me, this element, and what's focusable? Kind of just chooses that for you. You do have access to this pipeline yourself. So you can overwrite what's left, what's next focusable, what's right focusable, et cetera. We have new properties on all XAML control called XY right, XY left. You can focus, you can control that. Next thing you notice is that we have beautiful focus rectangles. We no longer have those, we call them the ants. You know, you guys seen the focus rects where they're just little ants around the element. They're no longer there. We just have these focus rectangles now where they're little black and white lines. And you can actually style this in any way you want. They're just now part of the XAML styles. I hope you like my beautiful pictures. The next thing is sounds. By default, if you run your application on the PC, you won't get any of these sounds. I've actually enabled, there's an API to enable these sounds. This API, by default, is set to auto, which means that on the Xbox, it's automatically enabled. But when you're on any other device, it's disabled. But you can override that. It can say always on. So that way, even on the PC, you can get the sounds working. And there are sounds for everything, you know, focusing, entering, going, backing out. You get these sounds by default. And if you're writing controls yourself, you have access to play the sounds for the user. So that way, your controls can support these sounds as well. It's very easy to do. Now, there's some things you need to think about. And when you're developing applications, you can use the controller to do it on the PC. But you will need to test them on the Xbox. There are some things that are different between the PC and the Xbox. For example, if you scroll and if you focus on a text box, on the Xbox, actually, the software keyboard will pop up. You won't get that on the PC. You just have to start typing here. Another thing you have to think about is as we're used to using our UI in a certain way. When you have your keyboard and mouse, you can always get to something easily. But when you have the controller, you have to kind of navigate to something. You can't always get there really easily. You have to think about how you arrange your UI. For example, if I try to get to the slider at the bottom, I'm going to keep going. If I have a big list here, it's going to be really difficult to actually get to that slider there. It might take a while. So you have to think about how you actually get into the situation where the UI is unreachable with the controller. If this is an infinite scrolling list, there's no way we're going to get to that slider, like absolutely no way. You have to think about that. Next is, in this case, for example, I'm focused on the slider. Now, what happens when I hit the right button? Do I go to the reset button, or do I actually move the slider? You got to think about that. So in this case, I actually move the slider. So there's no way to get to the reset button. And to fix this, what we've done is we've added a new way to enable your controls, what we call engagement mode. It's a new API that allows you to set focus on a specific element within your control. So that way, a user has to press A, for example, to interact with that control specifically, and they have to press B to back out and control with the UI. So if we go back to your XAML, you can set this to always to set the engagement mode to on, and that way I would have to press A, and we'll focus inside the slider. I'll move the slider, I have to press B. So these are things that we've enabled in the platform and stuff you can do with your own controls even as well. That was Xbox. Now, I showed you game and support, and also works with the remote as well. I showed you how XY focus on the platform works. I showed you the new style focus indicators. I didn't show you mouse mode. Mouse mode essentially is a new way that only works on the Xbox. And the way it works is you can enable mouse mode on your applications so that when users interact with the application, instead of using the controller to do XY navigation with focus, you actually get a little mouse indicator, kind of like you do in Edge on the Xbox, where you actually navigate through UI with a mouse. So if UI requires this type of UI navigation, you can use that on the Xbox. And we've done that much easier, so you don't have to spend a lot of time figuring out how to do the focus. I showed you engagement mode, and I showed you how Xbox sounds work. And the final thing I want to show you is Windows Ink. Now, we've had Ink on the platform for since Windows 10 came out. We've had a really easy way to do it. And we have a lot of applications on the store right now that use Windows Ink. One of the cool things that we're doing now on the platform is multimodal ink, which is the ability for you to use your hand, your touch, with the ink at the same time. So you saw the experience with the ruler. Now you can actually move the ruler, and you can do those kind of types of experiences. We also are enabling experiences for recognizing objects, recognizing text, recognizing a lot more stuff with the platform. So that way, it can actually does it all by itself. You just call a couple APIs and tells you what kind of object it is, what kind of shape it is, what the user has written. I do want to show you real quick how to actually use the how do you actually get started with inking. I'm going to do a quick demo. I'm going to start a new project real quick. Let's call it App2. It's a very creative name. I'm going to try to use that in the store. There it is. So all you need to do to get inking to work on your platform is just to add a couple things. First thing is you need to do an ink canvas. There it is. Let's go ahead and give it a name. I like to call it Inker. There it is. And then this will just simply allow you to put, you can put this on top of anything. You can just use the pen, and you can start inking on this. We also added, for the anniversary edition, we're also adding the ink toolbar, which allows you to add a lot of the same control that you saw in the Bridgestone application today. And all you have to do for this one is just need to set the target ink canvas via binding to the ink canvas that you have. And let's go ahead and give it some location. That's vertical alignment top, horizontal alignment, let's do right. I was going to put it on the top right. And go ahead and run this. And there's something wrong with. I think my whole machine is done. Anybody know how to debug this? No? Anyway, you would have seen that ink, the pen works, and you can do use the ink, the ink canvas, and the ink toolbar would have the ruler. You can just imagine that. I'll spend like a minute of you imagining that. This demo is doing so well, right? It's so great. I love it. Hopefully all the demos go so well. Anyway, that's all I want to show you for XAML. I showed you how to, some of the new features in XAML. I showed you some of the new stuff that we did in XAML for Xbox. I showed you some of the stuff with inking, even though it didn't work. There's a lot more stuff that you can play around with it. And if you do have any questions after this session, stop by and I'll show you on my computer how it works on a different computer, not on this one. This one I'm going to throw in the trash. Let me talk to you a little bit about the API platform and some of the new things we're bringing there. Now, there's a lot of new APIs we're bringing. There's over 2,700 plus new improvements that we've done onto the API platform for the anniversary edition. And there's a lot of cool stuff to talk about. I'm going to spend here 2 weeks talking about this, so we should better get started. First, Chat Sync Manager. The Chat Sync Manager, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to talk about just a few of them. I want to talk about, first I want to talk to you about composition. Then I'm going to talk about a little bit of extensions, how do you actually let developers write extensions for your applications. How do you handle web links, or how do you handle things like myapp.com to actually open your application? And then I'm just going to talk about some of the improvements we've done for the store and the Dev Center. First thing, composition. Who has actually played with composition here? One person, two people. Wait, you guys want to come talk to people? So to give an overview of everybody what composition is, I'm going to talk about a few things first. Let's talk about the graphics layer. So in terms of UI, when you create UI, there's a couple ways to do this. One way is to do the graphics layer, which is sits the closest to the metal. This is your DirectX layer kind of thing, where you write everything in C++ and you're a hardcore programmer. And you spend 2 days just to make a little box work and spin. But it's actually very powerful. You can get some amazing animation out of this, and how most games get all their performance from. Most developers, when they build applications, they use the framework layer, where they have all the controls, where they have all the layout, markup, everything. It just works really quickly. You can get some UI done really, really fast. And this is the XAML layer for a lot of cases. We wanted to have something between. If you wanted to do something more beautiful, if you wanted some cool animations, a lot of cases, you have to drop down to DirectX to do that. And we wanted to do something in between that makes this a lot easier. And in that case, we created the visual layer, which sits between the framework and the graphics layer and allows you to do a lot of this cool stuff and still use, you know, your managed language and still be able to write your beautiful UI, doing things like effects and doing things like really cool animations. And we called that the composition layer. So we have a lot of cool APIs. We announced this with Windows 10. In the November update, we released the whole preview of it. And with the Anniversary Edition, we're adding whole new stuff, things like effects. So I want to show you that. Now, the promise with composition is the ability to do really cool things that weren't possible before, things like having real-time blur on your application as things are moving around, it's still being blurred, and being able to animate those different types of effects, adding things like drop shadows and lighting effects, and all kinds of different effects that you might want to put in your applications, doing things like animations, even expression animations, we'll show you in a second. And want to do all this on scale at 60 frames per second. And want to make sure we use the GPU and all the resources we have to make this work really well. So let me show you a little example of what this looks like. First thing I want to show you is the application that doesn't work, the Contoso application. Let's go ahead and close this. So first thing you notice is, as I launch the application, you'll notice that opacity changes in the login screen, and the blur changes as well. So you'll notice a couple of things happening here. And this is all done with composition. I actually want to show you the code for this. Let's go ahead and close this. So the first thing we do is, in order to start using composition, you need to get access to the compositor. The compositor, you can get it through any of the actual controls on the XAML layer. Using the element composition preview.getElementVisual method. And this is, it's just one instance throughout your whole application that draws these visual. And this is what you use to interact and create new composition elements. So for creating a blur effect, all you need to do is create a new Gaussian blur effect. And this comes from Win2D. Have people used Win2D here before? Great, so a few people. For those that don't know, Win2D is a library that we released a while ago that essentially uses the D2D APIs to expose them to in a managed way. So you can create some cool effects, and you can do some really cool stuff. And this works with composition really well. So when you create your blur effect, you can set some properties. But the interesting part here is when you set the source, you set it to a composition effect source parameter. And that will come in a second. So you do things like create a new blur, a brush. So you create a new brush, and you set the blur effect as the effect for that brush. And one thing you add, you say the blur amount, I want this to not be compiled into the shader. I want this to be animatable, so that way I can change this on the fly. And then that's all handled by the compositor for you. And then you just need to animate it. So in this case here, I'm creating a new animation. And I'm saying I want to go from, in span of 6 seconds, I want to go from 0 to 100. Using this linear easing function that I've created, and I want to animate the blur amount on the blur effect that I just created. So that way I have 6 seconds, I can animate that. And then all I do is I set the source parameter, the source parameter is where it comes in into the blur brush, to a new create backdrop brush, which essentially is a see-through element that can actually see what's behind it and kind of just draws the brush on top of it. So that way you apply the blur effect to everything that's behind this backdrop brush. And then all you have to do is just add it into the visual tree. And you do that, you create a sprite visual that essentially adds that to your tree, and then you use the set element child visual to add that to an actual XAML element. The next thing we do here, we just also animate the opacity. So we have multiple animations happening at the same time, and you just start those animations and animate it over 3 seconds. So it's very easy to use, but it's really cool stuff that you can do here, and you can have a lot more cool effects that you can do. Now, to show you this actually working at scale, I have a little application I want to show you here. Let's go ahead and run this. I'm not going to even try to compile it and run. I'm going to try this. I learned my lesson. Anyway, so I have a little gear that I'm drawing to the screen. This is just a XAML gear. You can see here, and I can add more gears. Let's watch all this gear spin. I'm going to try to hypnotize you now. We have about, let's add some more, 9, 10. So we have about 10 animations happening at the same time. This is kind of natural, usual. Maybe you have this many animations in your applications, but this is about the same time that you see your application kind of start clogging up at this many animations. But what I do, actually, I want to add 500 more gears. And you see we have actually 500 animations, 510 animations happening at the same time, and it's still going pretty, pretty well. Actually, I'm going to add 2,000 more. There it is. You can't even see it now, but it's actually spinning, and it's not stopping at all. And if you actually look at the task manager, you see we're using about 10% of the CPU to do about 2,500 different animations on the screen. It's really, really cool. Now let's look at the code for this. I can actually make this go fast. You can't just see it now because it's too fast. Anyway, if you look at the code for this, there's a few things here. If we look at the add gear click, all I do is I create a new bitmap image of the gear. I set the location where I want it. I do some math in the perform layout calculation to know where to put the image. And then all the magic happens here in the get, in the add gear method, and the configure gear animation method. For add gear, all I do is I get the visual for this XAML element, so that way I can apply composition effects and composition animations to it. So all you do to get the visual, you just say get element visual for that gear. I set the size of that visual the same as the size of the gear that I get, and then I simply add it to a little list that I have so I can keep track of all my visuals in there. And that's all I do. Now, once I have this visual, I can actually start applying composition methods on it. To configure the gear animations, I do a couple of things. I create a new expression animation. Now, expression animation allows me to set some expression to be applied to this to a property of this visual. So in this case, the expression I've set is previous gear dot rotation angle in degrees. And the way this works is I pass into this method, I'm passing a visual of the previous gear and a visual of the current gear. And then essentially what it does, it takes how the gear is rotating and just rotates in a different the opposite direction. That's why it's negative previous gear. And then I set that to the current gear. I set that animation, I start that animation to that current gear. And then the final thing is when I start animating the gear, all I have to do is just animate the first gear in that list. And that way, each gear in the list will actually animate according to a gear before it. So that way, I'm applying an animation depending on the animation that happened before. So I'm doing 2,500 different animations all in a chain. So when I actually have to start one gear, all I have to do is just start the first gear, and everyone else will just follow. And it's really, really cool. That's it. Next thing I want to talk about is app extensions. Sorry, I'm going too fast. We spent way too much time on that fun game, so we're going to do this really fast. App extensions is a new capability as part of the app model that we have for the Mozilla platform coming up for the anniversary edition. And it's the ability for developers to extend, for third-party developers to extend your applications. So they can add extensions per application, they can add capabilities. In this example, imagine you have a photo booth application, and it's extended to actually add more effects to it just by different people writing those effects. The way it works is you just have to set a couple extensions into your manifest. So is the host, the application that creates that accepts these exceptions. You just have to add the app extensions coast extension. And then as the application that is providing extension for you, you have to set the app extensions extension to do this. I'll show you this in actually in a demo. And then there's a new API in the app extensions in the application model called app extensions, which allows you to open up and manage all the extensions for your applications. And you can subscribe to events to see what happens. But actually, let's see this in action. So I'm actually going to show you a demo of this. So let's see. Oh, no, I don't have it installed. Let's see if this runs. Good. OK, so this is an early version of Photo Booth Pro that we were working on before. As you can see, the UI is not set or anything. It's a bit different. But there's no effects. It's just a simple application. I can still take pictures, but I can't apply any effects. But what I want to do is actually want to add a little extension to this to enable these effects. So here, imagine this is the store. I'm going to the store. I'm downloading an extension for this. I'm going to install it. So go ahead and install this application. And it's installing. And you notice in a second, the application detected that an extension was installed and added those effects to my applications. Really cool, right? Now, the way this looks like in the project, I'll show you right now, I have two projects here, or several projects here. I have my main project, the Photo Booth Pro project, and I also have the effects extension project here. In the Photo Booth project, I have set the extension to a name of Photo Booth Pro, which is the name of my application. Just this is the app extension host. So that way, other developers can use this extension host to create extensions for my application. And then in my code, I've actually subscribed to several events. I get the catalog for that extension host, the Photo Booth Pro extension. And then I subscribe to the package installed event. So that way, if my application is running and new package is installed for my application, I can immediately refresh the application to get the new package. In the package installed, all I do is I go through all the extensions that are installed for my application. And then I grab, in this case, there are a bunch of shaders in each one of these extensions. That's what I expect. I grab each one of those shaders, and I apply them in a list so I can actually apply them to the image that is being played in my application. The Photo Booth Pro effects extensions, all this needs to do is actually just add the extension called app extensions. And it needs to provide what extension host this is for. This is in case Photo Booth Pro. And it just provides some information about this extension so it's user-friendly for the users. When they install it, they can see this information. Very easy, and it just works. The next really cool thing that we have is handling web links. Now, this is the capability for your applications to register to handle specific domain URLs. So that way, when a user clicks an email, for example, to go to a specific web application, if you have an application for that web application, instead of going to the web application, we'll open up your application. Essentially, what it does, it solves a lot of problems. But I want to show you a quick demo of how this looks like. Right here. So for example, let's say I have this email. So if I click this email now, you'll see I actually get prompted to open up this URL into two different things. I can open it with the web browser, whatever web browser I have installed, because this is just a HTTP URL. Or I can use an application I have installed that can handle this URL. If I can simply just select the application, the URL will open up my application for this and will go directly into the app instead of going to the website. The way this works, you can see here, if I scroll over, you can see it's just contosocafe.azurewebsites.net is the URL. The way this works is all I have to do is just add a new extension in my manifest called App URI Handler. And just provide the Contoso Cafe or whatever URL domain name that I have for my web service. That way, if my application is installed on the device, if a user clicks this URL, it will get prompted to either show it in my application or on the web browser. This avoids issues where you load your web experience with where the user has expected your application, or we have to redirect to the application from your web experience. If you don't have the app installed, you can still go back to the web, and the user doesn't know better. And finally, I want to talk about the store. Now, we've done a lot of improvements to the store. I mentioned the store is now unified across all the different platforms. And there's a lot of cool things in there. I'm not going to really go through all of them. You can do things like in-app purchases. You can do monetization with advertising, apply different types of services, for example, app services, do things like analytics and feedback. We've added some new cool stuff for the release that we have for the anniversary update. Things like A and B testing now, where you can actually target different types of markets and check out how your different versions of applications are working in these markets, so you can get some really good analytics for that and can decide what direction to go with your application. We also added the ability for you to do flighting, so that way you can test a specific package or application with a certain user. So you can add these users to the dev portal, and that way they'll get the new version. Test them out, get some analytics from those guys, be able to figure out what works best, what doesn't work best, and just a very easy way to do beta testing, et cetera. We've also added the ability for you to collect feedback directly from your users. So that way, a user, when they're using your application, they can hit one simple button that will take them to the feedback hub to provide feedback for your application. Now, let me show you how that looks like on Visual Studio in the application. As part of this update, we've now released the Visual Studio update, we've also released a new package for the store called the Microsoft Store Engagement SDK. You can get this actually today at the Visual Studio Extensions website and install it. The way this works is it actually works with the feedback application on your machine that might be that's installed. If you haven't used this before, essentially a way for users to provide feedback to the Windows team to improve the platform, and also provide feedback for different applications. So here you can go in and you can add some feedback, see what feedback has people provided, and they can actually plus one those that feedback, et cetera. It's a good way to interact with the engineers that are building the software, as well as users are actually using it. But you can actually take advantage of this as your application. You can actually have a whole section in this for your application. And the way this works is, if you look at this section here, all I'm doing is I can have a button on my application that asks the user to provide feedback. If something's not working, they can press this button. It will open up the feedback application directly to the context of your app, and then they can provide feedback to this. And the first thing I'm doing, I'm just checking to see if the feedback application is installed. If it's not installed, there's no point in showing the button even. And if it's installed, you simply just launch the feedback application and sync. And that's it. And the way this works, I'll show you right now. Let's go ahead and launch the application. I have a feedback button here. As soon as I press the feedback button, the Feedback Hub application is launched directly to a section for application, and the user can provide feedback to me. And then once I go to my device portal, I can access the feedback that users have provided. I can even respond back to users and collect this information and get more data about the data that I'm doing. Now, I went through a lot of information really quickly. We talked about some of the cool new features coming to the anniversary update. There's a lot more. So I encourage you to watch a lot of the sessions from Build. I encourage you to kind of play around with all the new stuff that we have coming up, and probably give us feedback as well. Use the feedback hub. Make sure that if something's not working, let us know. If something's working, also let us know. Talked about composition. We talked about app extensions. We talked about how to handle web links and talked about the store. That's all for the session. I have 5 seconds left. Actually, I'm over 10 seconds. If you have any questions, we're going to have a Q&A at the end. And I think we have about a half-hour break right now. So thank you.
home not just for developing apps for Windows, but for developing apps for all devices.
Good morning and welcome to Build 2016.